Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It was like, okay, there was a show scheduled, so I produced works and I put them up. But I wanted to ask myself, what is the reason I was painting? While there's no objective, what is it that is driving me to painting? Why am I in it? So that there would come a point when I would get into this commercial world will start coming in, and I need to be very clear that my compass is not driven by that. So where is my compass pointing became my question that I wanted to find out.
I think art is a form of expression for an artist. It is so personal, it's inspiring, thought-provoking. It's like a language in itself that can be interpreted in so many different ways and I believe can change lives. I am so in awe of all the artists that I have chatted with in this series, and I have personally learned and gained so much from each conversation, and I hope you do the same. So happy listening. Hi everyone, today I am in conversation with the very, very talented Rahul Inamdar. As a background to Rahul, he is an MBA. He's an engineer. He had a very, very fulfilling corporate life for, if I'm not mistaken, about 10 years. And then in 2007, decided that he wanted to become a full-time artist. I have seen his art in Dubai at the Dubai Fair, and also whatever I saw online. Looks like his art is extremely soulful and very, very reflective. So I'm really curious and very excited to have this conversation with you, Rahul. So thank you for joining in today.
Thank you so much, Payal, for having me on the show.
So Rahul, a little bit about your background.
I come from a normal middle-class Indian household where we don't really dare to get into art. We want to have very linear professions like medicine, like engineering, and kind of have a predictable life from there. So that's what kind of I got into. Initially, after my engineering, I did my MBA, and I was pretty keen about marketing and advertising as the stream. So I worked with a couple of companies in India. I think in 2007 is when I realized that this is not what I want to do for the rest of my life. So I started painting actually in 2007. It took me a little more to kind of have the confidence to quit. So I really quit my corporate job as head of innovation in one of the companies in 2013. So in fact, this year I complete 10 years of my full-time art.
Oh, so from 2007 to 2013, you were sort of painting, but you were doing it in parallel to your corporate job.
Yes.
Like you mentioned, because you wanted to gain confidence. Okay, so how did art, how did you think of art as, becoming a part of, an integral part of your life?
It's very interesting. This has a connection with the life philosophy that one may want to live by. So once I got into corporate life, I realized that everything was towards a certain goal. You wanted to reach somewhere. And I realized that when you reach there, you don't have the joy that you thought you would have. So the joy is actually in the walking towards than getting there.
Mm-hmm.
I started feeling that there is something that I'm missing. This is not the way life should be led. And that was, I think, the beginning of my trying to do something without a brief, without an objective, just for the love of it. And that's how I got into art. I was introduced to art during school days. My mother paints. So okay. There was a bit of exposure to oil paints. That's what I began with. I did not think of a genre that I like, nothing. It was not towards an objective at all. It was just like,
I guess, that's what you were trying to get away from, right? For an ultimate goal. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So when you actually started to paint, you said that you did that from 2007 to 2013 till you got really, really confident. What is it that you would paint?
Oh my God. If I see those works, I'm like, how did my family allow me to do this full time looking at those works? But what happens is when we begin painting, we feel that there's a surface, and on that you apply paints and we make something. So initially most of my works were figurative. They were about cities, not really landscape, but maybe slightly abstracted things that were around me in life. So, but that also was, that was also kind of thing. Let me do this on a Sunday. Let me just do something that I have not done yesterday or not done last week. Let me do it now. So it was just a lot of exploration. In fact, I remember in about 2009-10, I was working with a company and I was working with the MD of the company. And it so happened that I told her that I want to paint. And that has been really at the back of. So she said that, why don't you take a day off? So I had a 2-day weekend and I had an additional day. So I had a 3-day weekend then just for me to paint. And then I realized that there is an income coming in and there is a space. So money is there, there's time and there is space. So I took up a studio, which was like a house next door on rent. And I started painting there. In that 1 year, I would have made about 100 plus paintings. But that was the time when, while I did not reach anywhere in terms of the quality of painting, in fact, I didn't even think about it, but just the volume of it and being with the painting, I started realizing that it was like calling. Mm. I couldn't deny it. And it was giving me a maybe happiness or peace, which was far beyond what I was getting in my corporate job. And that made it very clear to me that I need to get into this and pursue this and build up from there.
Interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, it was like a process that you went through, and the more you painted, the more it became, like you yourself said, like a calling. And you felt that, you know, yes, I'm ready, and this is what I really want to be able to do. Because like you mentioned earlier, if you have this goal that I'm going to do this for the rest of my life, given what I'm hearing from you, it would probably at some point, you'd probably go back again and say, oh, but why am I doing this? Right? Yeah,
absolutely.
Because I noticed that when I was researching you, I noticed at some point you mentioned that you didn't say it in those many words, but that's the impression I got. You can correct me if I'm wrong, is that you did reach a point where you were stuck, and you mentioned that you started writing. Is that my correct interpretation of what
no,
I
it, yeah, It did happen. In sometime in 2017, I reached a point when I started saying, like, what is my language? So it has gone through multiple steps. Like, when I had my first show, and this happened in 2013, my first show was a solo show. I made the works, I put it up. And after that show, I went into this period of no painting. So I kept thinking and...
But, like, why was that?
It was like, okay, there was a show scheduled, so I produced works and I put them up. But I wanted to ask myself, what was the reason I was painting? While there's no objective, what is it that is driving me to painting? Why am I in it? So that there would come a point when I would get into this commercial world will start coming in, and I need to be very clear that my compass is not driven by that. So where is my compass pointing became my question that I wanted to find out. So I spent a lot of time that time saying, what is the kind of work I want to make? So I started listing down the works that have really moved me. Some of them were works such as Monet's in Musello Orangerie, then Rothko's in Rothko Chapel. Then there's this Hindustani vocalist singer, Kumar Gandharv, some of his pieces. So then there, I remembered a concrete road, then the texture of that and the feel. And all of these, I just wrote down these about 10 things that have given me goosebumps. I said, there is something common in these that have appealed to me, to my subconscious. And I need to kind of make work which will kind of have the same effect on me. Now, obviously, you cannot prepare it. There is no recipe to it.
Yeah.
You just kind of make a work and then you say, okay, is it talking to me or not?
Yeah.
And that has been my editing parameter. I don't edit works. If the work is speaking to me, the work is telling me something that I don't even get it, but it's moving me, then it stays with me. If it is not, then it gets thrown away. And that has really been the simplest process. But these 6-7 months, I also did a lot of technical work because I am a self-taught artist. One is the kind of color that comes from a tube. So you buy an oil paint or you buy whichever one, rest of the colors. You need to understand the physics and chemistry of these colors. Like some colors are cheaper and some are more expensive, and one must understand why they are and what is the value that they are adding. Also, Indians call, there's a word called sanskar. So you take something and you work on it to transform it into something. So even the colors that come out of your tube, to make them reach your canvas, there is an in-between work that must happen. That work happens with the instruments, with the dilution, with the concentration, with the application, the reapplication, understanding that every roll of a roller is like time passing. So one must, like, I would call it realization of the tools that you have. You must realize the tools so that then you can surrender to them.
So they actually become, yeah, no, that's a very interesting way of looking at it. And the connection that you have with the process, which will include, so you don't take anything for granted. You know, the paint or the brush or the roller, whatever it is that you may be using,
what we have around us is years of wisdom. What I don't have is a teacher who will open the wisdom and tell, show me, right? So I need to take the tube. I have to take it with all the respect that for the product that is there.
Yeah.
And I need to almost kind of understand what is the wisdom that has gone in. How does it work? Like, how does the pigment work? What happens when light strikes it? And how do I see it? So the physiology of my eye and my ability to see actually kind of fits in with the kind of color that I use. Or for example, if you see this canvas, it, like the surface of the canvas and the weave of the canvas. So initially I was using cotton canvas. And the kind of weave that I was having was like pretty loud. So even after I paint, it would show.
Yeah.
My question was, do I want it to show? I don't want to control, but I want to select my materials that speak to me. So how do you go on from all the options that you have in the world, reducing it down to a place where these are the things that that speak to you, and you are almost dialoguing with them when you're making the piece of art? Because again, I do not work from compositions. I'm not thinking that, okay, this is how, what is going to look good. Now let me just place colors in these boxes. It's not how. You're almost evolving the work. And when you're doing that, then you want friends with you. And the canvas is a friend, and the tools are the friend, and the colors are the friend. Again, the other thing is that each piece gets made only once. There is no, because I'm not composing, there is no repetition that I will say, okay, this is the work, this is the wrong thing, I will discard and to make another one. Because it happens only once, I need to have the best of the materials when I'm making it. It shouldn't so happen that I made it and I say, oh my God, why have I kind of compromised on this? So slowly and steadily, I started realizing the entire process, how I would want. At the same time, my work started, in terms of form, the work started changing. And so both of them started going together.
So that's what you meant. Yeah, that's what you meant. Trying to understand the language when you mentioned that earlier. So in short, you've kind of evolved with your works with time and experimentation and understanding of what, so you've kind of grown with it organically. And like you've mentioned, you were not looking at the commercial angle of it, which would then become very, then it would, it would lose that essence, right? Is what my understanding is.
If you see this process of growth, experimentation is a very important element.
Yeah.
The moment I bring in a commercial angle, I start saying that, okay, I need to rely on this to get me a certain amount of money in, my experimentation will start dropping down, because there will be something to lose if I don't achieve it. Experimentation will only happen when I am absolutely at peace and absolutely secure, and I would just go freewheeling into those waves of exploration and then come back with something or may not.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, there's a lot of time and money that is spent when you go on experimenting. Like the works that you saw were oil paints on silk.
Yeah.
Now, from canvas, why did I go to silk? And I almost, like, I did four rounds of work on silk before presenting those works. But all of that is, I would not have happened if I am completely locked in into commercials.
Yeah.
So, a great help is from the family. My wife is very supportive of this, and she's like, okay, I'll be running the house and you take care of your art. Because all said and done, art is a difficult profession. If you want to go more and more pure, the target audience that it will appeal to will be smaller and smaller, and you need to be willing to kind of be with it.
Yeah. So I was going to ask, what are some of your struggles as an artist? So you've kind of responded a little bit to it, but I'd like to know more from you.
I would not call it a struggle. I don't like the word struggle at all.
You don't like the word struggle. Okay.
Because struggle is a notion of you feeling that something is incomplete. Like there is this friction internally in the word struggle. I would still call it an experimentation kind of thing. If you're saying what you don't like in the journey of art, that I can tell you.
Okay.
So I don't like exhibitions, actually. The problem with a show or an exhibition is that it makes it about it. So there's going to be an exhibition and I need to put out works. So either I start thinking about it or I still make works which are driven by the presence of that exhibition. And that is what I don't like. It's a reality of life that there is some bit of commercialization that has to happen. However, it does take away from the purity of practice in some way. How I believe that is what I don't like. Apart from that, it's an incredible thing. practicing something in your own space, in your, like, even the direction is your own, the exploration is your own, and all the failures are your own, and all the successes are your own, and that's really beautiful. Also, what happens is this medium is, you will have to really listen to it for it to start talking to you. Most of the times, see, if I'm writing, I can read what I've written. So the words already come as kind of vessels of meaning, right? I put the vessels and I can edit them and I can place them around. With colors, red may not be what it is known for, or a blue may not be what you associate it with. So it's far more free and to interpretation. So what one is trying to say using those colors, or using the lines or planes, it's actually massively open. There isn't, and for oneself as well as for the viewer. So it's a very abstract journey in that sense, and that makes it very valuable actually to have. Like, we don't really walk in the dark most of the times. Most of the times we want to have a structured, clear path. This is a great adventure, a lot of fun.
No, absolutely. And if, you know, you're passionate about it, to the extent that you've, you know, you've, because in today's times, there is a lot of commercialization of art. There's no escaping that, and there's no, you know, and there are so many consumers who will go, and I saw that at the Dubai Art Fair or any other art shows that I may have gone to. But for an artist, I feel that, you know, so you had like a stall or a space. People were just walking past.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
And, you know, and so how many people in that art fair were actually there to and stopped by to appreciate your art? Because there were like 500 other artists or galleries who were exhibiting. So, you know, so that's the commercialization aspect of it. And people would be there in the hope that they could sell. But I think it's far deeper from your point of view, and which is what I find really, really interesting, is that, and you know, that your art is essentially your journey, it's your thought process, and it doesn't necessarily have to lead to an ultimate buying of your art, you know, which I think is...
I would say it will happen.
Yeah.
I'd say it's just about the time frame.
Yeah.
So if I start thinking of time and say, when will it happen? Then the entire thing becomes objective bound.
Yeah.
If I just remove the time frame and I say, okay, let me make the work, and when it has to sell, it will. And I've seen this happening. If somebody sees one photograph of that work and they will find me, okay, can I see more of your works? And they will come down in the last. So actually, it's not something that one must worry.
Yeah.
And when, like, I make the work, why did I put out the works? So silk works that you saw.
Yeah.
I know that it's a risk, even putting them out or sharing. But what I feel is it's an important thing for me to do. That is my most recent work. I want to be surrounded by that work. If I'm spending 4 days sitting in an art fair with a lot of clutter, I at least want to be in the middle of my works, which are the most recent works. What I consume has an impact on what I produce. I don't want to be consuming things that I did about 5 years back, 7 years back, and no more than that. Here, when I sit here, I start reflecting, I start thinking about it, I start, okay, what is happening with these kind of works, and in turn, the works moves forward. So that's the reason why I really don't think how many people will buy or what, but are these works powerful enough for people to stop and vote?
Like I did, for example.
And people just go silent. They don't know what to say. But that's what the works are doing to you.
Yeah.
Will not, if a work has been produced, so these works are obvious, every work is actually first time in the world, right? It's not coming from any other source.
Yeah.
So it will have that impact if it moves you deeply. It is like that.
No, that's so true. Do you think that art has the power of actually changing lives from a social perspective?
Oh, it does. It has as much power as, say, meditation. If I were to put it out as, will meditation have power to change people's lives? And I think everybody will say yes, it does. I think it's pretty universal in that sense. But when I say art, art is a much abused word. Art has a lot of qualifiers. It's not something that we will just kind of see on a wall. And this I learned some time back. But art that can truly make us go silent, make us go within ourselves. And that's really powerful. It does change life. And I've experienced this.
Yeah.
It makes you feel centered. It's like whichever activity that kind of, I think some people find their flow in sports when they're surfing, or maybe when they're doing yoga, or maybe when they're singing, and they find their flow. And sometimes when we're listening to music and there's a piece and we get lost, what is this getting lost? Getting lost is almost like stopping time, which is continuously moving through the actions that we keep doing all the time. And when we stop time, what happens is that we get into something called a time vacuum, where we are just there. So we are almost kind of, it's exactly same space where we are concentrating on our breathing and without thinking anything else. I think that's a great, like in the world of Instagram and the entire social media, I think centering is something each one of us, if introduced to, misses. If not introduced to, we are free. We don't even know that exists.
So
I think it's extremely relevant today. In fact, the other thing about art is there is a connection between being human and art. I think it has that kind of, there is an, like when we see a painting like Guernica, the kind of emotions that are aroused are not just because he has thrown those elements around, but the entire work itself moves us. Mm-hmm. So it's not some of the parts.
Yeah.
It's actually far beyond. And I think very rarely we see such things. So seeing art actually of every type can actually get us or make us a better human being, I would say.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. I saw that you also did some work on linen. Right? So what I mean, so you've obviously experimented, you mentioned, with different surfaces of like cotton canvas and the canvas, you know, the more smooth, I don't know what it's called, but the smooth canvas. Plus you mentioned silk, and then I saw that you've also experimented with linen. So out of all these different materials that you have used, which one kind of calls you the most?
So as I explained, the material of the canvas is extremely critical. So I have used cotton canvas, I have used cotton paper, which is completely made of cotton and which is hot pressed and a very seamless surface. I've used linen canvas, again, which is linen and coated, primed and sized.
Yeah.
I've used silk, all of them. Essentially, the canvases that we have are coated with, say, a color.
Right.
Gesso is what we call it. And we kind of coat it and work on the same. Right. So basically, we are working on a surface which is almost a plastic surface. So it's a completely firm surface that I'm working on. So between cotton and linen canvas, I prefer linen canvas because I get a very tight weave. And the surface is very smooth, which helps my work. But that's an absolute personal choice. It's basically when I'm using, so in we call it, what is a rolling pin? The balan.
Yeah.
It's one of my tools that I use on canvas. So I want the least amount of resistance to that balan movement. And that can only happen if the canvas is very smooth. Otherwise, I will have speed breakers.
Yeah.
So that's why I prefer. But going further from here, what I realized during COVID actually is that we have very little in our control in life. And we feel that we are in control. All the time we have this illusion of control. When COVID came and struck us and so many people lost their lives, lost their family members, and we were just at home, blocked in 3, 4, 5 months, not even stepping out. I started realizing that controlling an artwork is actually a very fake way of making the world. The art must happen, must flow. So I need to reduce my role from the maker of the work to just one of the instruments, one of those instruments that put it together. And that is where I said that I cannot be working on this primed canvas because it's very plasticized. Unless I work on it, it is not really playing a role. It is pretty passive. So in terms of my experiments, I went on the uncoated side of the canvas, which was like a fabric. On a fabric, when you put a drop of color, the color starts moving.
Yeah.
And even if you try to move it in a certain way, you can't. So it's almost like in the equation, there were colors, there was canvas, and there was me. And the canvas was being passive. Now, when I moved to the fabric of the canvas became active and my role reduced. And I made a whole series called Reduction on these, and which I showed in Delhi in my gallery. And incredible results. It's like what we don't realize is how much we lose out because we've been taught that things must happen in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, there is a certain chemistry that comes into play. So these, when I'm working on a fabric, then I need to kind of coat it and I need to kind of seal it and all of those also happen. So from that canvas, because linen and cotton are essentially cellulose-based fibers, 75%+ is all cellulose. I moved to silk because silk is 95% protein-based fiber. So the entire behavior of a silk fabric is very different as compared to this. The absorption is different. Half of the color almost passes through. So the colors are milder. But it is absolutely in sync with what I want to do. I want to go as subtle. I want to go as sublime. And that is where I'm not crafting it. I am working on the right medium and let it happen. So without
like,
really,
like you said, you're one of the moving parts. You're not,
So without taking control, absolutely behave, enjoying the process of surrender, I'm able to let the work come through, which is in sync with how I want it to be. See, finally, I take So my work has to be like, so if you look at Darwin's theory of evolution and those three equations, survival of the fittest and those three equations that he's actually able to reduce down why we see evolution in those three lines.
Yeah.
So it's, and we keep looking at this, there's something survive, something survives because it's fitter, and because it survives, it procreates, and that's why how the new species begin. Now these three things keep repeating and repeating, and we see the entire beautiful nature around us with all its variations, just basis. And I find this to be something that as an artist, I want to practice. I don't want to be sitting there and working on it, but I want to be with it as the as it kind of organically evolves, and I want to witness it. And yeah, maybe it is my work, but so my work is actually not painting a canvas. My work is to kind of bring it all together and let it play.
Let it play. And then, you know, then it's how the viewer kind of perceives it, or what, you know, it's their thinking then. Yeah, no, that's quite interesting. One piece of what you have created that called you the most, and why?
Gee, why is a very difficult question to answer, because it's not a conscious understanding. Like, it's not a feeling saying, "Ah, this is a beautiful piece." I never get that feeling. In fact, the pieces that really stay with me are not something that I can classify as beautiful. I always have question marks on them. I'm like, okay, what is it? Because it's, the piece is always ahead of me. I have to catch up with the work. So I'm seeing it for the first time. So I remember a couple of pieces have been really there with me. One of them was we were doing a film. We were shooting a film on my work. And it was a diptych that I had made. Out of that one work, one piece got completed, and another one was being worked on. And between the two, it was, I just kind of took a break. I put up a piece on the wall. I couldn't breathe. I was very overwhelmed by that piece. And I still cannot gauge why that happened. Even if I see the piece again, I don't get the feeling anymore. But that is when it happened to me, and it just stopped me in the tracks.
So that's how much power that piece had over you, yeah, that you were so overwhelmed.
In that moment, happened like that. Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. Wow, that's amazing. I could keep listening to you forever, but Rahul, you know, I guess I have to wind down this conversation. I just wanted, you know, for you to just share some thoughts with, again, I mean, aspiring artists, I'm not sure if that's the right term to use, but in your context, but, you know, any, like, people who've, like you, who would want to move towards being creative but don't have the guts to do it, what would your advice be for them?
So I'd say, first of all, if you want to be creative and you're not being creative, that means you're working somewhere, you're doing some work which maybe financially it supports you in some way. Have a lot of respect for that work. It feeds you. There's no point in struggling with that. Whereas one small piece of your time, reserve it for yourself. It could be 30 minutes, it could be 10 minutes, it could be an hour. In that time, do not do anything else but your calling. Answer your calling in that time. Just do it every day. And don't think about anything else. My experience is that that calling expands because it is calling. It is not really something that you are trying to tell yourself. It's coming from a place which is beyond you. One, it starts feeding you back with a lot of nourishment. You become more and more anchored in that space. Second, it starts demanding more and more time. When you are not toned, the time is not difficult to give. When it starts demanding time, you will start giving time because you really are not in control. That voice is in control and you just kind of follow it. So I would say that the entire worldly thing of, okay, let me just quit my job and let me do this and there's going to be responsibilities. Money is required and that is a reality. There's no point in struggling with that. The idea is to kind of glide from the requirement of money to the requirement of your time. So converting your money back into your time is really the thing to do. For artists, I would say, again, our work, one question we need to ask is, what is our work? And that is the question that stays with us all through our life. Why do we do art? And what is it that we are doing in it? And it's not that you will get an answer now, or maybe the answer will come and it will go. But I think that is the question that will keep on giving you clarity, will keep you anchored, because there are a lot of things that will keep changing and that will keep on swaying you. But there's one thing that remains true is that the art is coming through you. If you're not there, that art is not there. Yeah. So there is certain, it's almost like a reason for your own existence. If there are. So I think all the artists, if they have kind of found it like a calling, then it is something that is beyond them and they need to kind of just go with it.
Yeah, that's true. That is so true. I mean, and like you're saying, it's a process. So you don't, you know, if it's something that is calling you, allow it to evolve into a very, very centered thought and experience before you jump into it. Like for you, from 2007 to 2013, you allowed that, you know, emotion to find an outlet, and that's when you decided to kind of make that shift, right?
In 2012, I was attending one of my launches, product launches, and I heard a voice saying, "Your work is done. Now you go." And next day I resigned.
Wow.
Because it was that clear. So I would say that when you start going with the flow, there is no choice. The choice gets made. Today we think that I am deciding. That's really not real. It gets decided. You just have to be with it.
Yeah, it gets decided. You just have to be with it. On that note, thank you so much, Rahul. It's just been so really, really very inspiring to listen to you. And I hope, you know, through this conversation, a lot of people who are listening in or who will eventually watch the interview on YouTube will also get inspired and, you know, just keep at it. And I'm sure we're going to see a lot more evolution in what you do over the years. So I'm going to definitely follow that very, very closely. And I really appreciate your time and this conversation.
Thank you so much, Payal. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For more weekly conversations, do listen to Melting Pot on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. Follow us on YouTube and on Instagram at Podcast Melting Pot. So until the next episode, this is Payal signing off.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.